Austin, Texas neighborhood. Police there say a teenage boy was killed and a woman at a home was critically injured when a package that was left at a home in that neighborhood exploded. And the Austin Police Bomb Squad and FBI are investigating a second suspicious package left in that same neighborhood. Another big winter storm is going to be heading for the nation's northeast later today and tomorrow, especially New England, which will be getting its third major snowfall in 2 weeks. This one will affect Rhode Island, eastern Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and in Maine.
Expect 9 to 14 inches for many spots, 7 to 10 with a heavier wet snow through parts of York County.
In Maine, that's WMTW meteorologist Sarah Long. Donald Trump Jr. is campaigning in Pennsylvania today on behalf of the Republican candidate in a special election tomorrow to fill the seat left vacant when longtime Republican Congressman Tim Murphy resigned because of a sex scandal. We're online. Find us at usaradio.com.
At Robert Half, we know finding the right employees is a job in itself, and it's a job we love. You see, Robert Half isn't just a staffing firm. We're people. People who believe in finding the right people to fit your company's needs. Because employees who are a good fit are more productive, more engaged. Finding a great candidate isn't easy. But at Robert Half, we know it's possible. Robert Half, the experts in accounting, finance, IT, legal, marketing, and administrative staffing. Learn more at roberthalf.com/radio.
A tragedy in Africa as people were attending religious services. We get the story from USA Radio's Wendy King.
At least 16 people were killed after lightning struck a church in Rwanda on Saturday, according to an official. Lightning struck during service at a Seventh-day Adventist church and killed 14 people immediately, according to Nyaruguru District Mayor Francois Habitegeko. Two other people died during another lightning strike in the same area on Friday. For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King.
The mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, will be giving a keynote speech at the South by Southwest conference in Austin later today. Khan, the first Muslim elected to lead a major Western capital city, telling USA Today he wants Americans to know that his long-running feud with President Trump has a deeper context. He says, "Friends fight. It's inevitable." Khan saying, quote, "The reality is that the United States and the United Kingdom have a very special bond." His speech today will focus on how social media companies like Facebook can work with governments to prevent the spread of hate speech and fake news. And the Major League Baseball champ Houston Astros will be headed to the White House today, where they'll celebrate their 2017 World Series championship with President Trump. The team will then, right after that meeting, head back to Florida to resume spring training for this upcoming season. And for USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Hey, Pat, did you know between the two of us, we know how to screw in a light bulb?
Come on, Steve. We can do better than that. Well, at least I can. Tell you what, you sit there and look pretty, and I'll fix it.
Listen to you, big guy. Better yet, let's get everyone to listen to Home Sweet Home with me, Steve Bailey, Inspector with Brass Tack Home Inspections.
And I'm Pat Gregory, Handyman Extraordinaire with Taskman Home Improvements, every Friday at 11 a.m. Or you can go to our archives and get access to over 50 podcasts. We cover the basement to the attic and everything in between.
You can even call us at 908-237-0410 during our radio program about our home improvement projects. Remember, Home Sweet Home, every Friday at 11 on Hunterdon Chamber Radio.
From the basement to the attic, you're listening to Steve and Patrick. Home sweet home.
Local weather here today at HuntertonChamberRadio.com. 34 degrees outside right now. Today, chance of rain and snow later on in the early evening. Rain and snow tonight, likely changing. Well, rain likely changing over, so probably be the mix around here. Tuesday, snow likely before noon, then a chance of rain showers. Mostly cloudy, high near 45. Lows Tuesday night in the 20s. Scattered snow showers possible on Wednesday. Highs will be near 40. Again in the 20s on the overnight Wednesday night. Clearing up on Thursday. Friday, Saturday, through the weekend. Stay tuned for Chef Bill's Table.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Hey, welcome to Chef Bill's Table. I'm your host, Bill Kinslow, here on Mondays or anytime through our podcasts. And get together, talk about it. We got good food holidays right now. St. Patrick's Day coming up this weekend. And Easter another month away. Then Mother's Day. We're something going on all the time. Today we're going to explore some of, well, I guess we could call it Irish-American, the corned beef dinner. I've got Pete Nercio with me today, my spice guy. And I thought it was fitting that he would be on board because of the variety of spices and seasonings that go into the pickling liquid for corned beef. Now, this, of course, these meals that we celebrate, many of them in this country, because of the immigrants that came over and kind of adapted their food ways with some of the ingredients that were found here. Now, the traditional Irish dinner would not have been corned beef, would have been the Irish bacon. Unfortunately, I guess it happens in many areas, the farmers that beef industry was big in Ireland, but the poor people that grew the cattle couldn't afford it. Had to eat potatoes. The English, of course, the salted beef was how it started. Corn was kind of referred to the salt kernels, apparently. But the salted beef was a way to preserve the meat for the Navy, for a lot of, you know, military often drives a lot of our direction with foods as far as you have to take care of the troops, right? So anyway, that's where the corned beef started. The nitrites that go in there, and Pete will explain something about how everything works in there and how the spices got in there. We're thinking of a cartoon that I remember from the Sunday papers, well, even the daily paper, too, George McManus, Bringing Up Father. And it was an Irish couple, Maggie and Jiggs, some of you may remember, had a daughter, Nora, and a son. And for some, it was kind of a play on the Irish assimilating into our culture. And, of course, the story was they won a sweepstakes, so they were instant millionaires. And Maggie, of course, wanted to be the social climber and do everything correctly and fit in. And Jiggs kept wanting to hang out with his buddies and eat corned beef and cabbage at the local tavern, Dinty Moore's Tavern. So he was always getting in trouble for sneaking out there and it was funny that the Dinty Moore character supposedly came from a friend of McManus called, his name was James Moore. And actually, there was a restaurant in New York, opened in 1914. Dinty Moore's closed in the early 70s, but it was a hangout for sports and people and celebrities, things like people like that. So they had a good run. I think there was a small chain that started. And also, Hormel trademarked the name finally and made their Dinty Moore's beef stew, which probably still is available. So a little bit of history there. Always like to like the little backstory. Stories are always fun, right? How the holidays come around. But the with the corned beef, which seems to be the focal point, of course, at the restaurant we do many other Irish specialties or specialties from the British Isles. But Pete, the spices that go into that curry, you get this little spice packet with the corned beef, usually, or you can see things floating around in the cure. So what's in there?
Well, generally, Bill, what you'll find in there is going to be mustard seed. You'll find some crushed bay leaves, some peppercorn, and you may even see some chips of allspice berries in there. That's the basic, usually.
Yeah, I've got I've got a short list. You see many spices, McCormick's and different spice companies put out blends, which are kind of handy. You don't have to stock full containers of each thing. That's your specialty, right, making blends for people?
That's right. We make about 65 different kinds of blends now.
Really?
Yep.
So from, but pickling, is pickling spice one of them?
Yeah, well, it's actually two of them. we make a tart pickling spice blend and a sweet pickling spice blend. You know, the tart pickling we'd use more for like if you're going to do vegetables or pickles.
Okay.
That's got dill seed in it and garlic. And if you're going to pickle things like fruit, then you want things like cinnamon and ginger in there, which is, it's going to be more sweet when you pickle the fruit. So, or if you make a chutney or something.
Okay, all right, yeah. As I see with a lot of these, the corned beef spices, that there's kind of a mix of that. There's, you said your peppercorns and coriander, mustard, red pepper flakes, but they're also used, it seems to be allspice and sometimes a couple of cinnamon sticks maybe, or
it depends on the
cloves.
Company.
Yeah.
It depends on, you'll see cloves in there too as one of the basics, but cinnamon sticks, it depends on the company, on the company that makes it.
Okay.
You normally in canned corned beef, the way it was made back in the 18th century and the 19th century, didn't have cinnamon in it. It was more clove and peppercorn and mustard seed. Some might have added coriander, but cinnamon was very expensive, so that came along later.
Yeah. So it's fine. It's like, again, originally probably just salted the nitrates and nitrites.
That's
sodium
right.
Nitrite, the pink salt. Do you carry that as part of your?
We don't carry the nitrite. The purpose of it, though, if the audience is interested, is that when you normally brine beef, you know, there's the blood in there, and if you brine it over time, which you need to do with the salt,
yes,
it starts to go gray.
Right. I guess it was put in there so it kind of looked like. Like red cooked meat.
It actually reacts with the myoglobin.
Myoglobin, right, yeah.
And it makes nitrosomyoglobin, which is linked to cancer.
Well, they say but, that's if you char it, apparently, right?
Well,
expose it to high heat.
Well, yeah, but that's okay, because what happens is that nitrosomyoglobin is sort of reactive. This is the chemist in me again.
Yeah, no, that's right. Food's all about chemistry.
And what happens is it creates the nitrosomyoglobin splits, and you create what's called free radicals. I don't know if you remember back in the 60s, early 70s, everyone was worried about free radicals.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, remember that? So that was... That's,
now we have different kinds of radicals, right?
We got different kinds, yeah. And they're still free. Someone's... Anyway, so what's got to what happens is that it's the free radicals that will attack biomolecules, and you'll get mutations. But during cooking, that reaction happens, and it'll attack some of the meat, or at least the biomolecules in the meat. So the question is whatever is formed by that reaction during cooking, is that carcinogenic?
Okay.
And it's hard to say. It not everything that forms is carcinogenic.
Yeah, and I guess as long as you're not having a steady diet of anything.
Yeah.
I mean, there's things in
you know,
a lot of the foods we eat that people don't realize that if you only ate one thing, then you might have an issue. But
even so, I mean, it's there for two reasons. One is to keep the meat pink by making nitrosomyoglobin.
Right.
So that way, after the pickling, it's still pink. You know,
yes, they didn't like that gray.
They didn't like the gray look.
Yeah.
And the other part is that nitrites and nitrates are antimicrobial. So it prevented botulism
yes.
When it was canned.
Right, because botulism is anaerobic.
Yeah.
No oxygen, killed easily. But if you don't heat the food before you
exactly
consume it and there's botulism there, you're done.
You're done.
Yeah.
So the nitroso compound and residual nitrates and nitrites were very good antimicrobials.
Yeah, so salting was preservative and then the pink salts for appearance kind of and then anti-botulism.
And yeah, it was a preservative.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what preservatives do. They stop bacteria
growth.
Yeah, before
refrigeration, that's what we needed.
Exactly. Most spices, too. That's the other issue. The purpose of the spice, two reasons. One is that there are antimicrobial properties, and two, it imparts some kind of flavor into the meat.
So. Yeah, because you wonder when you see this mix here. I mean, you could definitely see the influence of the trade that was going on then, because none of these are indigenous to Ireland or England.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that the whole corned beef and cabbage thing is not an Ireland Irish thing. It's more of an American immigrant Irish thing.
Yeah, and but we still enjoy it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, everyone's Irish for St.
Well, I guess also what happened with the Jewish immigrants too. They came here. Of course, beef we had a lot of cattle in this country. Other countries not as much because it's. You need a lot of land, and it's expensive, and it's time.
Yep.
So where pork might have been king, or lamb. Probably lamb was more in many countries, but come here, and beef was everywhere. So
yeah, with the whole Midwest.
And for, kosher diets, of course, can't have the pork, so you like that cured or smoked flavor, so you've got...
That was the switchover, too. Typically, the original corned beef was made from undesirable meat parts of the cow, like the neck was one and the shanks. But it was the Jewish American population in this country that really focused on using brisket.
Right. And then, it has to be the forequarter.
Yes.
And you see, well, the pastrami is still the best. They say it was the navel down in the belly there, which is a bicut. But
and that's a smoked brisket.
Yes, and you got to cook that a long time. We've got a break for a couple of messages here. I got flashing on the screen here, and we'll be back and explore the Irish dinner with Pete.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
This is Tony Clark, Para Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
All right, we're back at the table here. Yeah, you know, during the break, Pete and I were going over. I think Pete's got a little bit of the history. We don't think of beef as being a major product of Ireland. I always think seafood. I know people go. It's always bacon and potatoes. I think of the, like, you're surrounded by water. Why wouldn't seafood be the best? But yeah, apparently the when the English were in charge, and the farmers were forced to grow the cattle because they had to feed the British Navy, right, ruled the world. And the Irish farmers, of course, had to eat potatoes, and that's probably what the potato famine that wiped out a lot of people. Apparently that was just not having, a lot of that was not having enough reserves in case something went bad.
My understanding is that what happened is that the around that time, Britain was industrializing. So they were really becoming a real wealthy nation. And some of the more prominent business people bought up lands in Ireland, prime pasture lands.
Sure.
And those lands were actually used for farming of a wide variety of vegetables. And what happened was they put it just for raising cattle so they can get the beef and corned beef and do their business.
Ireland is probably more dairy. I mean, I always think of Irish cheese, yeah. Irish butter.
Cheese,
so
butter.
The dairy cattle are not necessarily the best for consuming as
steaks. So the problem is the small tenant farmers, they since they didn't have access to the really nice pasture land, they wound up with this more of the secondary and tertiary type of less desirable, more clay, less fertile land. Not as much of what they used to grow grew.
Right.
And one of the few things that did grow well...
Potatoes are growing.
Potatoes. Yeah. So they became dependent on potatoes, and then when the blight hit, they were pretty much in trouble. And so you could say that the corned beef industry contributed to the blight that struck Ireland.
Yeah, and then they come here...
Well, yeah.
Right?
They came... But then
now the food we call Irish is... kicked them out.
Yeah,
it's crazy when you study history, right?
It's unusual because you don't realize some of the connectivity, and sometimes it's you just don't connect things, but when you really understand history, everything's connected.
Yeah,
you know. So I mean, remember we talked about discovering the New World because pepper got too expensive.
Right, looking for the better way.
Looking for a better way to get those spices. So you know that's what happened. So the Irish they started emigrating to the United States because you couldn't survive in Ireland. And like you said earlier, beef was cheap. And so they actually went from eating more bacon to eating corned beef. And so it became a staple here in the United States from the Irish immigrants. And that's really where the tradition of the corned beef and cabbage, really it's rooted here.
It's like, you know, spaghetti and meatballs.
Exactly.
It's here.
Pizza.
Yeah. 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 Pizza. I've had people they go to Italy and pizza is nothing like what
you see. No.
we Americanize it. We got more ways of.
We change everything.
Yeah. Supersize it, right?
Exactly.
So what else?
It's just interesting that's one of the early. Backgrounds to corned beef.
Does brining? Well, I call it brining corn. I guess corning is what we think of that as more.
Yeah. Well, that's just it.
But is that that doesn't necessarily tenderize the meat though? It's really more for flavor and preservative.
Yeah, it's more for flavor. It doesn't really tenderize the meat.
Because brisket, you still have to cook a long time.
What you wind up doing, though, is, what you wind up doing with the corn, first of all, the term corning has to do with chunks of corns of salt.
It's the salt, the big salt crystals.
Yeah, big, you know, coarse salt. Those are corns of salt, so corned beef with salted beef. So that salt water will draw out the moisture out of the meat, but then the salt water will go back into the meat and add flavor, and so you wind up with a more hydrated piece of meat, but it's salty.
Yeah, I see. On because I of course have spec sheets for what I'm purchasing,
mm-hmm.
And some of those contain up to 40% brine solution.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because that's part of the, you know, we've talked about this equilibrium and what yes. brining does.
Yep.
And that's what winds up happening is normally salt pulls moisture out of things.
But then
equilibrium...
Right. The salinity on either side of the membrane.
Salinity in the beef should be the same as outside of the beef. And so you get water and salt penetrating the beef. And so you wind up with a more softer piece of meat. It's more hydrated.
There's more water in it.
Yeah. And when you cook it, that steams.
Yes. The water runs out. And then
the water runs
And
runs
the thing is, this process takes about 10 days because you've got a large chunk of meat, whereas a pork chop or you could do overnight, chicken
it's
you could do
smaller.
3 or 4 hours, you know, it's a quicker process there. So if you're doing your own, and you see articles like corning your own beef, and I guess for your own flavor, and also to make sure, you know, you've got a nice product to start with, it's nice to do, and of course you could do them in freezer bags so you don't have to use so much solution as long as the meat's surrounded, but...
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it is refrigerated and we're cooking it fully, I mean, there's very little dangers there. I remember even when I was first at school, the students were doing for a buffet or something. They had a pot. They were corning meat for something back then. I was wondering, this stuff is in there for a long time. Sauerbraten we pickle kind of, but it's 4 or 5 days. That's more in the vinegar style. That's kind of for tenderizing, I think.
Yeah, vinegar.
But the corning is for preserving. And we like that flavor. And oftentimes, meats are brined before they're smoked, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to, I guess the old way was the dry cure.
Yeah, the jerky type of...
draw moisture out and
that's
keep
how
bacteria
prosciutto
from growing on the surface. But you still have like a good bacteria, there's a fermentation process going on inside, especially with salamis, things like that. I think there is a bacteria introduced
to
this fermented. Well, I think most of the great foods in the world are fermented, don't you?
Well,
cheese, bread,
beer,
soy sauce, beer. But foods. Oh yeah, beer is food, right?
Okay.
Guinness, according Guinness is food.
I'm sorry.
There's a certain amount of vitamin in there.
Yeah, the salt is savory, so it really adds flavor. Salt per se has no real flavor unless you eat it. Straight up, then you get a salty taste. But when you add it sparingly, what it does is it enhances the flavors that are already there. So it's a savory component.
And I think another difference, just as we're talking, some brines or even, you know, things before smoking have sugar in them where when you're corning, does that have the sugar in
It's not common, but...
Right?
But, it's not very common, but you know, sometimes you can take any of the tartness out by adding sugar when you corn.
Well, I say yes, because salt and sugar, like if you want to counteract bitterness or over-saltiness, you put a little sugar in.
If
something's
to work,
too sweet, you put... And I say that's kind of the trick behind... processed food, there's the amount of salt and sugar that's in there, we don't perceive it as much because it kind of softens the effect of either one. So if something's too salty, something sweet might diminish that effect of the salt. So, and this is the danger of highly processed foods.
Well, I guess the American palate is more used to sweetening things. I mean, if you eat foods from across the world... That are made the way they make it there, a lot of Americans wouldn't eat it. Those types of things, they're either too bitter or too sour or too harsh.
Chocolate was bitter until figured out to
Nestle.
Add sugar to it for the European palate, right?
Exactly, the Swiss.
It was a bitter drink like coffee.
Yep.
But I watch people used to do with coffee, you know, putting 4 packets of sugar in a mug of coffee.
Oh, that's me.
does it even all dissolve?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, so that's the thing with sugar. It really is for the palate, the American palate.
So when we're cooking these the corned beef now, people call it boiled dinner sometimes, New England, and you really shouldn't boil it. You know, the the mussel boiling 212 degrees, and if you've got even a little salt in there, it might boil a little higher. You really want it to simmer, because boiling really toughens the proteins, even though it's been cured or corned.
Yep.
As you said, it's not really a tenderizing effect. It's more liquid. But and the fact that the 40% of, I think it's what we call pump or the liquid, there could be some even more. Food labels usually will tell you the percent that's on there. But that's why, you know, for me, you got to figure almost a pound per person of beef brisket. Because, you know, if it's 40%, you end up, it's going to have you shrinkage from cooking anyway.
Yeah.
And then.
I never thought of it. Yeah.
Yeah, that
makes sense.
Yeah, so you see it at the end, you think, oh, I bought this big piece and now there's nothing to it. So we've got a break for news at the half hour, and we'll be back with Pete and corned beef.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
That's the Mayday call from a helicopter pilot whose chopper goes down in New York City's East River last evening, killing his five passengers.
East River, engine failure.
They come a little broken. I say it one more time.
It was a Mayday call, LaGuardia.
That 33-year-old pilot's now in stable condition. Two of his passengers, who were aboard the chopper to take nighttime photographs of the city, were dead at the scene. Three others died at a hospital a short time after their rescue. The White House releasing some details about school safety measures the president wants in response to deadly high school shootings like the one in South Florida a month ago. The president's proposal includes bolstering background checks and encouraging states to allow qualified armed personnel into schools. It does not call for a change in the age to buy a firearm. This is USA Radio News.
Allergy congestion. Cut grass. Cat on the sofa. Dust in the carpet. Whenever allergy congestion makes you feel trapped, break through with Allegra D for 5-in-1 24-hour multi-symptom relief. Allegra D combines a non-drowsy antihistamine with a powerful decongestant for fast relief that starts working in just 1 hour. Break through allergy congestion with Allegra D. Use only as directed. Guaranteed or your money back. Visit Allegra.com.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn. I was one of the biggest critics of Obama in the national media. Suddenly, I was under massive IRS attack. So I hired Sam Landis. Sam did an amazing job. We won twice. I didn't owe a penny. Thank you, Sam Landis. Many of you have IRS problems, and you've spent thousands with non-lawyer tax resolution firms. Do yourself a favor. Call Sam Landis for a free consultation. Trust me, Sam Landis is the best. Sam saved my life. Call Sam at 800-WE-HELP-YOU with the letter U. That's toll-free. 800-WE-HELP-YOU with the letter U. 800-WE-HELP-YOU.
Back at the table here with Pete. So yeah, with corned beef. So with the pickling spice, you said you'd probably use the tart one for the corned beef.
Yeah, actually, we don't even use all of the spices that we add to the tart one. Like for instance, our tart pickling spices will have garlic flake in it and some onion. Flake as well. But if you add it, if you're going to do corned beef, you might want to use fresh garlic or you know that sort or fresh onion chopped. So the actual spice blend we make, we don't add those things because most people want to add them in fresh.
Oh yeah, so if you're doing corned beef, for example, explain it to people. We have slow cookers that we do them in high humidity and. Basically, in the heavy cryovac that the meat comes in, we cut a slot in there and put the pickling spice as kind of a rub. So you really get a more intense flavor. So we'll buy the same cure already cooked for year-round, you know, for our normal Reubens and corned beef sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, for St. Pat's, we cook. And it's the same cure, same company, but when we do it, it comes out little more intense because we're not boiling it. We're not diluting it in the water.
You know, I was going to ask you, is it better to cook the cabbage separately or together?
Okay. Well, the cabbage is, of course, a little bit bitter. I like the cabbage cooked in the salty water. And apparently that's where the carrot comes in, because the carrot was supposed to offset the bitterness of the cabbage. Carrots are not really an Irish. We always serve them, and I just found this out. I've been researching, and the Irish don't really want carrots. It reminds them of William of Orange, the king that caused all the problems.
I thought orange was part of Ireland.
Not orange. No, they hate orange.
Oh,
but the carrots. So I'm even questioning, should I serve it this year? You know, like once you know something, like, oh, I don't feel good doing this. But I like the balance between that and the salty meat. You know, nice carrots, cabbage. So we like to cook the cabbage in the meat. It's really a nice one pot meal because you have your brisket, and they say, well, how long do you cook it? And no matter what the size, really, it's more the thickness of the meat. And it usually takes a good 3 to 3.5 hours, I found, to tenderize brisket. And you can find round, corned beef round, if you want leaner, but you know, that's why bother, right?
You want the marbling in there if you can get it.
What happens is brisket fat doesn't all melt out. That's why chefs are putting sometimes in the hamburger meat now. They're grinding up not just regular chuck, but short rib and brisket. Because if you look at even a Texas barbecue brisket, there's still fat in there after 12 or 14 hours. It is not all run out. And where some of the fat in a burger melts out, you see it in the pan when you're frying the burger, or you get a little flare-up, you know, that comes out. Some of the brisket fat does not melt. It still stays in there. So that's kind of the charm of, if you're making a burger with brisket meat, that you have some of that fat will stay in the burger instead of all running out. So you've got that, you know, different mouthfeel, you know, the oil.
Sure, sure.
So, yeah, so three and a half hours, and I call it, I mean, you're not going to go by a thermometer because it's going to be well done. So I put a fork, and usually a two-prong cook's fork is the best for this, and put it in the thickest part of the meat and give it a little gentle twist, and if the fork turns easily, then the meat's done. That's how I make sure.
Sense.
And you're almost better. I mean, if you overcook it, the worst that can happen is it's difficult. You just slice it thicker or you chop it up. It's still going to taste good. But if you undercook it and it's chewy, it's really not.
Yeah.
I remember the first place where the Irishman owned the place, the Fireside. And, you know, St. Patrick's Day was bigger than New Year's Eve for us. I mean, that was the day of the year. And we're trying to keep up, you know, boiling the cabbage. And apparently we pulled some too early and it wasn't all the way done, and he threw a fit. I thought somebody's going to get fired for undercooking the cabbage. Like, I'm never going to do that again.
Now, I heard that with the cabbage, some people will braise it in a pot in a pan and then put it in. And some people say, don't put it in right away. Put it in the last hour if you're going to do that. Otherwise, it's going to be a mushy mess. And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I like the cabbage well done. I mean, it should be soft, almost melting. As opposed to coleslaw, which is crispy. You know, you got the two textures. What I just started doing is, instead of the wedges of boiled cabbage, which are hard to time and you lose a lot of the leaves, and I caramelize it. So talk about braising it. You start it in some neutral oil with salt and pepper and cook it down just like you're cooking onions for onion soup. So it's get the moisture out of the cabbage. It shrinks up. I use the shredded like you shred it for coleslaw. And cook it down, patience, gentle heat, and then at the end it kind of browns a little bit. And it's very unique. It's like the difference between a cooked onion and a caramelized onion. So you caramelize the cabbage a little bit. Very, very nice touch. And
sounds
for us,
good.
It was the presentation is a little bit better instead of, again, having the big wedge of cabbage on there. So that's what I do now. So braising it, but then caramelizing it at the end. I'd recommend it.
Huh.
You know, you don't have to worry about timing it, putting it in the water. I mean, if you want to throw one in there for flavor, that's fine. But that's always the difficult part, because the brisket, all right, it's been in there a couple of hours. When do we put the potatoes in? When do we put the cabbage probably within, in an hour, it probably would get nice and tender. But to try to time everything to come out together is
a little tough, huh?
Yeah, well, that's why your potatoes, you'd use more of probably a waxy potato so it wouldn't break down. You wouldn't throw a russet potato. Okay. Those are good for mashed potatoes. And then the carrots, if you're putting them in there, just, you know, big chunks.
Hmm.
So, but the cabbage, yeah, caramelized cabbage is, for me, that's the way to go.
Yeah, I was reading that somebody's using a balsamic reduction to actually put on the on the whole thing when you're done. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Well, balsamic syrup's great. It's another one of those single ingredient perfect sauces. I mean, sometimes we make it quite often and at the restaurant. Once in a while, I find I'll put a pinch of salt at the end, but usually it doesn't need anything. Hmm. You know, we take a decent one, not a, you know, we don't use a special aged one, but, you know, we call it the industrial balsamic, but it is, it's true balsamic, and we reduce it, which is the same effect of the aging for 20 or 30 years, the evaporation that goes on. I mean, you're cooking it, of course, it's not the same as an aged balsamic. I would never dare to say that, but the effect is you get this nice syrup, but you have that sweet and sour together, and like ketchup. And I say it's usually going on salty food anyway. So even glazing corned beef, sometimes people will do that after it's simmered and tender, and you strip off the fat. And some people will, again, that American palate, make a brown sugar and Dijon mustard, and then you get this fatty meat. Now we're going to throw some sugar on this stuff, right? Get up the calorie count a little bit more. So, yeah, like the boiled dinner for me, I mean, yes, it's salty, but if you do it in the one pot, you cook the vegetables in there, they all need salt anyway. We find the juice that's left is, we save it for, you know, if you're going to make pea soup or something. I mean, you don't even have to put ham in it. You got to use your corned beef liquid.
Wow.
So, and also some guests like to make a little sauce with that. They'll we have a horseradish cream that we use for beef, for Cajun steak, for sweet potato fries, and it's simply horseradish and sour cream. And some guests like to take some of that and dilute it with a little bit of the corned beef liquid, which is salty, and make like a loose, like a horseradish cream.
We'll do something similar. we'll take horseradish. We'll take some whipping cream and whip it, heavy cream, whip it, and then add horseradish and lemon juice.
So I use sour cream, which is acidulated cream,
mm-hmm.
but that's a nice delicate, just that lightly whipped cream and fold of flavoring into it.
Gives it a nice little flavor to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's
tang.
Yeah, it's so similar to using the cultured product, but it is a nice delicate sauce though, and it's gluten free, right?
Yeah, that's
you
true.
Don't have to worry about it. Yeah, so the and with the brisket now, there's the full brisket, then there's the first cut, going to be more expensive, but that's just the leaner part. Without the, you usually two muscles on the brisket, and the one on the top side where the fat is, that usually that's what the ones I like, but it's a little coarser grain and more fat in it, more flavor. And you have that, so when you're slicing it, of course, that grain runs a different way. What we do is separate those two muscles, and then we slice against the grain so it's tender. You don't slice with the strings there.
Right, right.
It's funny because corned beef, one of my guys a few years ago, one of my employees, he got some and actually cut it into chunks and boiled it. A Central American fella, and made like kind of a soup. And he cooked it, I mean, cooked it a long time, and the meat was in fact, cooked it so long that it wasn't even much pink left to it anymore. But it was very tender. But the flavor that came out of that, again from the from the corning or the brine, you're not having to worry about using stock or bouillon or anything like that. So, yeah. So cooking corned beef. I mean, it's funny. You know, we see it concentrated on this one day, just like turkey is on Thanksgiving. But the meat's good any time. Let's face it.
It makes a great sandwich. If you like Reubens.
Reubens all the time. But we also, at the restaurant, we offer a couple of other, we do the beef and Guinness, braised beef and Guinness stew. I make the Irish stew, the lamb stew, which, actually we should talk about. I have a little difference of opinion on most recipes on that, but, And we get the bangers, too, the Irish bangers, sausages. Oh. And those are nice. They've got the Holland. Apparently, you know, a lot of those sausages, just like if you think of a boudin in Louisiana, it has rice in it, mm-hmm. the filler. So the bangers have traditionally what's called Holland rusk. You might remember those. They look like a dried out English muffin. I should minimize. They used to come in a tin, and we used to use them to put things with cream sauces on back in the you know, 60s and 70s. But it was a nice round disc of dried, you know, nice special bread called rusk. And apparently that's crushed up in the bangers. I guess a true banger, a sausage, should have about, you know, 20% of that extra. So I have to watch it with people, though, because sausages are normally not considered something that have wheat in them.
Yeah,
I have to watch
it at
the restaurant. The bangers are not gluten-free, but that's what makes them good. And they're also inexpensive, but just the just with the mashed potatoes, onion gravy.
Yeah, it probably made them go a long way.
Well, that was it. It had to stretch it out, even though it was pork. I mean, you're still stretching it out. But also, just like with meatballs or meatloaf, if you don't have about 30% filler in there, it's not tender.
You know,
you need that.
It's true.
It softens it up.
It softens it up.
You can't just take chopped meat and make a hamburger.
Also, with chopped meat, when you add things like bread and maybe a little bit of egg or whatever, it acts as a binder.
Yep.
So it doesn't. Your meatball doesn't just like crumble.
But you need that soft texture in there. We got a break for a couple of messages, and we'll talk about some Irish stew. Can't just move.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Back at the table here, Chef Bill's table. Pete and I were talking on the break about cooking with beer because he does sell spices and botanicals to brewers and distillers,
right? Yeah, we supply distillers and brewers.
Yeah, you don't realize, I mean, some of these special, well, gins, you know, liqueurs and things like that, of course, but beers now, I mean, there's...
It's a Belgian ale. It's got bitter lemon peel in it. I mean, bitter orange peel.
Yeah, that's the blue. Yeah, the
and coriander.
Peel. Yeah, that's. I don't know what I have. Oh, we had a stout Saturday. We had a sample of one. It was a hazelnut chocolate stout.
We sell chicory, roast chicory that some people make stout. I guess right here in Flemington, Lone Eagle. They use roast chicory in their stout.
Okay, so when you're making stout, so you're roasting, you're malting the barley, and you're toasting it so it gets dark. So you're saying they're putting some chicory in
roast chicory too, yeah.
And what would that? That's the bitterness? Because we used to have chicory mixed with coffee down in Louisiana, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's a cheap substitute during wartime. I don't know his recipe, and I wouldn't say it if I did. But it's one of the components that he uses. So in one of his stouts, I think he makes more than one. But we sell him roast chicory. From France.
Yeah, the craft, I mean, the brewing and distilling is just taken off, and these people are not afraid to bend the rules a little bit either. You know, you learn traditional methods and ingredients on things, and there's, you remember from Skunk Town, what's his name?
Yes, that's Kane Fowler.
Yeah, he's like, I don't have any tradition. I'm going to do what I'm going to do.
Yeah, that's the Europeans when they have something that they really feel is worthwhile. They put all these sort laws in place.
Well, you can't do this, you can't do that. Yeah, you have a lot of bad stuff out there.
You can only make it here or else you can't call it champagne.
Yeah, because there was a lot of fakes, bottling on the premises that was done to make sure that in their bottle with their label on it that it was actually their product going in.
Because otherwise,
you don't know. You just buy a bunch of bottles and you can put anything in there. I was reading that book, The Billionaire's Vinegar, about the guy that got a collector. And, you know, it even had a way that you could fake an old Lafite Rothschild, an old Bordeaux, the flavorings you could do. But, you know, it was a mystery novel.
Huh.
And pretty funny. A lot of good wine history in there, which I recognize. It was a good refresher for me, but just, you know, the auctions and all the record prices that were paid for this wine, and was it real? Was it faked? You know, how could you tell? And that was pretty cool.
Well, some of it was the standardization. Like, for instance, before hops was used in beer, people were using other types of herbs to make things bitter.
I thought the hops were kind of a preservative also.
They may be. I'm not a beer expert, but I can tell you that prior to the use of hops, they used things like Sweet Gale is one of them. They do also use something that is called in Canada Labrador tea, which is a rhododendron, and that added the bitterness. But those things were found in Ireland, for example. Gale is found in Ireland, so is Labrador tea.
Okay.
But what happened was with the advent of hops, the Germans, they'd like to put specs on things and standardize. They're very good doing that a lot. And so one of the laws was that you really can't call it beer in Germany unless it used hops. And so
country, I think it has to be from barley too. You can't have any other adjuncts.
Yeah, but for the bittering part of it, it went
to hops.
Prior to that, the beer was called gruit. I'm not sure if you've heard that term. It's like the word fruit, but you drop the F and you add a GR in front.
Gruit.
Gruit, and that was the original beer. So before hops, yeah.
Yeah, so cooking. So hops, when you're cooking with beer, of course, you have to remember that, how much bitterness, because that's going to get left behind. We do our beef in Guinness. We braise it. Of course, Guinness is that nice chocolate-colored. It is still bitter. It's like a porter or a stout. They're still bitter, but
not as much as in Ireland. When I was in Ireland drinking Guinness, it was actually a little different than what you buy here.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah,
not as bitter.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, so I mean, we braising in anything like this, of course, alcohol, you know, boils, it simmers at a lower temperature, but you're getting the flavors in there. I found with the beef and Guinness, I do add a little, depending on the taste, could add a little brown sugar at the end if you want to. Just not to make it sweet, just to balance.
Cut.
Because I, you know, and I'll do ours. I'll put carrots and mushrooms in it. Just, you know, again, carrots and beef, brown stock. You know, it's all good. The beef and Guinness, we will brown the meat first. I like to cut my own cubes, too, instead of buying stew meat. Because stew meat, you've got, I mean, it's chuck. It's good tasting. But, you know, the fat content sometimes is a little weird. You got, you know, you're not sure, I mean, what muscle they're coming with. So I'll buy a chuck flap meat, a little more uniform in size. Little trimming, but then I can get nice in a restaurant. You need uniform pieces. You, first of all, they cook evenly, and you want the appearance. You know, I've used the what they call the mock tender or the chuck tender. You can get nice medallions, and they cook up tender, but they don't hold up well. They break apart once they're braised, and then it's hard to. They don't hold their shape. They kind of they get too tender.
Huh.
So, but as I say, you don't want to use round. You don't want to use even sirloin. But some a good piece of chuck that you cut up yourself, braising the meat in the Guinness. Again, it's stew, so it's, you know, a good couple of hours. Brown it well, and I put a little flour in there. If I'm making lamb stew, on the other hand, and this is the way I was taught, and some of the traditional recipes still will be the Irish stew is boiled. It's not browned first. I always thought the Navarin, the French style, was brown for the meat first. I don't brown the meat for lamb stew. And it comes very gentle. I use domestic lamb, good cubes. But what I'll do is I'll bring the liquid to a boil. So if I'm using, say, chicken broth or something as the base, and I will bring that liquid to a boil and then put the meat in. So it's not like, it's not searing it or sealing anything, but it sets the pieces. I guess you get less leaching of the flavor of the meat out. If you start in cold water, it's going to draw everything out. So I will start it with boiling water, and that's kind of my sear. So put the lamb cubes in there. And then after about an hour there, you can tell. I use a spoon to check the tenderness of stew meat. And when you can, it takes a little effort still to cut through it. That's when I'll start adding vegetables. And if you want to make it gluten-free, you could use more of the floury potatoes. And actually, some recipes call for using both kinds. You put some of the, like, russet potato diced up early on, and then use your other potatoes, your waxy potatoes, later to garnish the stew. Well, the hour's flown by. I hope everybody enjoys this weekend. Enjoy your Irish food. Whether you're Irish or not, these Irish have some past favorites, but no, seriously, it's always good food, and still cool enough where we can enjoy
it. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, we'll...
Hopefully we have a guest next time.
Yeah, we're trying to get a couple of other producers and chefs on the show, so... But anyway, have a good week, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Happy St. Patrick's.
Thank you.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
You
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
For the second time in as many weeks, a package has exploded in a residential neighborhood in Austin, Texas. They say this morning's blast killed a teenage male and left a woman in her 40s critically injured. This explosion happens at an address in East Austin. Back on the 2nd of March, a 39-year-old man died when a package exploded at his home in Northeast Austin. In New York City last evening, a pilot puts out a Mayday call after his sightseeing helicopter with five passengers aboard plunges into New York City's East River. All five passengers were killed. The pilot's in stable condition, and there's a report that a passenger's bag may have mistakenly hit the emergency fuel shutoff button. And this is USA Radio News.
Listen to what Dave Ryan says about Andro 400.
Andro 400, I really...